B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Today is prog rock guitarist Neil Morris. His new record, The Great Adventure, comes out Friday, January 25th. It's a double concept album that took a lot longer to record. They scrapped the first edition and had to start all over.
You know, so it's difficult to talk. It was a difficult Skype call that we had with the Neil Morris band because I had to kind of drop the bomb and say, I'm not really feeling like this is there. What do you guys feel?
We talk about working with drummer Mike Portnoy and scheduling around his schedule, where he puts himself in the prog rock landscape, as well as his life in Nashville and bumping into other musicians around town.
Yeah, I run into people every now and again, but yeah. I'm not that known in the real world. As Mike says, there's the real world, and then there's the Neil world.
Morris Fest is coming up this summer. We talk about that. We talk about vinyl, working with guitarist Steve Hackett, and lots more with Neil Morris today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Yes, doing it up again, back at it with another Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast, and Neil Morris today on the show. And I've never actually talked to Neil or met Neil before, so it's always fun to try to, you know, get inside these guys' minds who you've never met, talked to, not even that familiar with, but I kind of dig his music. And of course, I've been going through his prog rock face, which I've talked about a little bit here and there. But anyways, that comes up first. Then we got rock news with Al Beck coming up second with Greta Van Fleet and their debut on Saturday Night Live. Got some Pearl Jam news. Queen, Ozzy, Guns N' Roses as well, reaching the top of the charts back in December, and we'll tell you about that coming up here in just a few. Hey, it's real important if you guys get a chance, at least for me, you know, if you don't have to, but if you get a chance, give this a 5-star rating, write a review if you can on iTunes, wherever you get this stuff. It's just something I like to say, something I like to throw out there, so if you're kind enough to do that, I would appreciate it. And as always, thank you so much for listening. Yeah, Neil's got this new record coming out this coming Friday, The Great Adventure. Really good stuff from Neil, and let's stop wasting time and get right at it. Neil, how's things?
Oh, great, man. Great.
We're rolling now, so I'll get you on your way here. The new record is about to drop. First of all, I wanted to say something. You know, I saw your pictures from your skiing trip in Colorado. That looked like fun.
Oh, man, that was amazing.
Yeah,
it was the best weather and snow conditions I've had in a long time.
Now that's funny because right. Like I've been ice skating for 42 years. I play hockey and everything, and I've never skied. And one of my friends is a ski instructor and says I would pick it up pretty quickly. But do you you're kind of a do you like to ski?
Yeah. I don't snowboard. I ski. Yeah.
Aren't you ever afraid you're going to fall down and break one of your digits?
I am. Actually, I can feel my body sometimes going ding 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 ding. I was skiing with my daughter and her husband, and they're young, you know, and I just tell them like, hey, I need to go real light right now, you know. I could sometimes, you know, skiing is funny. Apparently, like, it's real hard on your wrist. Like,
really?
Yeah, with the poles, and you know, some of the times I'm using my poles maybe more than. And I ski kind of old school, and so I am aware of that, but everything's fine.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I play hockey sometimes with, like, my friend from Godsmack and stuff. You got to be careful. No one can hit him on the ice because he's got a gig that night, you know?
Right, yeah.
So,
totally.
So you got the new record coming out, The Great Adventure, and I was just reading through the press for this, and this record a little bit longer to put together than previous ones, eh?
Yeah, we did I don't think in my entire career of working with Mike Portnoy, of all the records we made, I don't remember a time when we, you know, blocked out 12 days or something to write and arrange a record and then have him get his drums done, that A, we didn't do the drums, we didn't get the drums done, and B, I came away from it, or, you know, I did, but... it could have been either one of us. I don't remember ever a time when we, you know, listened to the stuff later and went, I think it needs a little more work.
Really?
We did a single disc version of this album in January. And I just came away from it feeling like it wasn't everything that it wanted to be. It's hard to explain the creative process, you know. But sometimes you just feel in your gut like, no, it's not quite there. And you don't even know what it should be. It's not like there's anything wrong with it. You know, so it's difficult to talk. It was a difficult Skype call that we had with the Neil Morse band, because I had to kind of drop the bomb and say, I'm not really feeling like this is there. What do you guys feel? And there were a lot of differing opinions, but there were enough of us that felt like, yeah, it needs work. And so we sat with it for a little while, and then during that time, while we were sort of sitting with it, I started to cut it up into pieces and take the stuff that we had written in January and kind of, you know, move things around, and wrote some new pieces and fit some songs that had been cut off the album back into it. And I made this kind of 2.5 hour version of what would become The Great Adventure. But even that, I knew wasn't quite there. I knew it wasn't exactly what it was supposed to be. It didn't become that until we all got back together this last August. That was Mike's first available window between
yeah, right.
Like for the whole year, it was like, Mike, do you have a week this whole year? And it was the beginning of August. And so we got back together and we hashed it out, and you know, thank God it all worked out, man. It was down to the wire, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you talk about that, because I've interviewed tons of bands and stuff. And one of the things that always amazes me about musicians that write records and stuff is when you sit back and listen to it, is it ever really finished? And what you're saying is you maybe have had the bass there, but you just had to kind of put the sizzle on the steak. Am I reading that right?
Well, it was a rewrite. You know, sometimes when you write a piece. Like with this Jesus musical, Jesus Christ the Exorcist, that I wrote, that is coming out this year. You know, I mean, I did a version of it 10 years ago, and then I re-looked at it and started, you know, cutting stuff out and adding new things. And, you know, you could keep rewriting things forever. It was funny, I was listening to the vinyl of The Great Adventure with my son yesterday, and which sounds amazing, by the way. And this part came up, and I was like, oh man, it would be so good to have an answer vocal after that thing on the second half. I sang it to my son, and he's like, oh yeah, that would be really good, but Dad, you know, it's too late. And you know what you say then? Well, we'll do it on the live version.
Yeah, I think, you know, as you're talking, I think I remember Rob Zombie telling me one time, it's like, you know, you could listen to death and just beat yourself up over it, but at one point you just got to put it away and say it's finished.
Right. Yeah, Mike puts it like this, works of art are never finished, they're just abandoned.
Yeah. Yeah, well, in his other band, Sons of Apollo, you know, Bumblefoot's a really good friend of mine, and I was talking to him, I don't know, last month or something like that, we were talking about it, and, you know, that record they kind of put together in a few weeks and stuff and put it out there, and I asked him how the music, you know, evolved as they toured and whatnot, and he says, you know, the guys got more comfortable with everything, they kind of add a little piece here and there, so I guess you could probably do that when it's live, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of times we start to mess with things, and you know, sometimes we don't, you know, sometimes we'll play it just like the album if we think that that's the right thing. But yeah, you can keep creating, man. You can keep creating forever.
So this is like you were saying, 2.5 hours, double concept album. I mean, this is quite a big chunk that you bit off and are giving out to the fans here coming up on January 25th. What do you want the fans to take from this record, this concept record? What's something that you think sticks out on it?
Oh, well, I mean, there's a lot of, I think, I guess my favorite thing about the album is all the beautiful themes. There's so many great themes. You know, one of Eric's theme, that's what we call it. When Mike gets out a little dry erase board and starts writing down all the sections so we can sort of keep track of what we used and what we didn't use and what we need to revisit. Yeah, Eric's theme is great. Bill's Dark Melody stuff is just great. I don't know. There's so many things on this record that are wonderful. All the guys just played their hearts out, and the vocals are amazing. A real standout for me is The Great Despair. That song with Eric's vocal is so compelling. And then The Love That Never Dies at the end is, I think this record's going to deliver live every night, just like Similitude did.
Now, when you write a record like this, are you looking at it from a live standpoint as well? As like you were just saying, like, this song will go over great live?
Not really. What I was looking for, I was, Similitude spoiled me live. It really did. It was as if the piece itself delivered, and all you had to do. In fact, I'd be praying before the concerts, and I just feel like, just deliver it. The message is there. The music is there. Just deliver it. And so I felt like I could relax and just deliver it, and it would just overwhelm the people. By the time we get to the end, I'd never seen so many grown men and women crying. You know, it's really touching and beautiful. And I didn't want to go out with anything less. Once you've tasted of something like that, you don't want to, especially at the end of the night, you don't want to close with something that's kind of like, I wonder what they're going to do for an encore, you know? So that's what I prayed for, and I felt like the Lord really helped us to have that this time.
Yeah, when you build a record that good, the next one's got to top it, and maybe that's why you sat with it for so long, this The Great Adventure, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you could ever top it, you know? It's not really like that. It's sort of like trying to top a child,
yeah.
You know? But I did see that we had reached a kind of potential with Similitude.
Mm-hmm.
That I wanted to feel like we were not coming back from, that we needed to produce something that had that level of impact. And I think we did that with The Great Adventure. I'm just amazed, blown away.
Yeah, I can't wait to listen to the whole thing. Welcome to the World 2 is out right now. That's in video form, and you can check that out on the internet web, on the World Wide Web. January 25th, the record comes out. And by the way, I was talking to David Ellison the other day, and I told him, we all have that kid we're not really crazy about. So I'm just kidding. So are you down in Nashville?
Yes.
And you've been there for a while now, or what?
Yeah, I've been here since 95.
Okay, so you've kind of seen that whole musical thing growing right before your eyes, probably.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy with everything that's going on in this town.
Now, do you go to the grocery store or the bank or something and run into different musicians all the time?
Sometimes. More at the music stores, you know. Yeah, I run into people every now and again. But yeah. I'm not that known in the real world. as Mike says, there's the real world, and then there's the Neil world.
Yeah, Mike is quite a character. It's funny you were talking about him a few minutes ago, you know, and trying to work him into his schedule, because he's got, what, about 87 bands, right? He's got all sorts of projects going on. And so that's got to be difficult. But in today's day and age, as opposed to 1995, it's probably a little bit easier in the fact that, you know, we're kind of so connected with the internet and everything.
Yeah, it's true. Funny story, a friend of mine in Belfast, he was watching a DVD of, I think, the Neil Morse Band. And his young son walked by and said, "Hey, Daddy, isn't that the drummer that's in every band?" Of course, he says that says more about his DVD collection than it does about Mike.
That is hysterical. I'll tell you, I saw Sons of Apollo, I think it was around this time last year. I think Martin Luther King weekend or something. I went and saw them. They were out in Fort Wayne, so I took the drive out there. And man, that band's so powerful and stuff. And I can't even imagine how good they sounded by the end of that tour, you know?
Yeah, amazing.
So
amazing.
I talked to Steve Hackett a few weeks ago, and you've had the pleasure of working with him a bunch of times too, eh?
Yeah, I love Steve. Yeah, we're going to be hanging a little bit on this cruise to the edge that's coming up.
That's right. And, you know, you were talking just a few minutes ago about how you don't live in the real world. You know, you live in the Neil world. So I put on my social media this week, I don't know, for whatever reason, I got back into vinyl a couple years ago when one of my friends started talking to me about it. It's kind of a long story, but for whatever reason, I've kind of really gotten hooked on this prog rock of the 70s. Now, I'll be 50 coming up here in a few weeks, so this stuff I'm not discovering for the first time. I guess I'm rediscovering it. And I put on my social media, like, name some of your favorite prog rock bands. And your name came up several times. Where do you consider yourself in, like, the prog rock landscape?
Well, I mean, Spock's Beard was considered part of the resurgence, I guess, in the 90s of prog. So I guess we're known as sort of neo-prog, I think is what people call it.
Okay.
You know, which would be, you know, a way of saying the new prog guys. I don't know. You know, I really try to not get too into labels and genres too much, you know, because, really, I mean, it sounds corny, but it really is all about music and just trying to create from a pure place and not feel like you have to be in any particular style. That's one thing I really like about the prog fans. You can do a real straight-ahead song and they'll get that, too.
Mm.
It's not like it has to be in, you know, alternating bars of 9 and 7 or something like that, you know. So it's cool. I feel very free creatively, and I think we all do. That's the wonderful thing about the progressive rock audience.
Now, you know, it's fun to talk to a guy like a Steve Hackett or like a Carl Palmer or something. Because for me, like, maybe the height of it as far as like commercial success and whatnot was probably in the 70s. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, sure.
And so it's kind of cool to go and talk to somebody like that. I just recently bought a couple Genesis records from the 70s with Peter Gabriel and stuff, and it's like I find myself going back to them. And I think I saw a post on one of your Facebooks around Christmas time. You've got some records I've bought, some vinyl that I've bought, the Yes and the Genesis and the whole thing. So it's really fun, for me anyways, to kind of go back and rediscover it. And, I mean, you living in that world and stuff are still into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just bought The Lamb on vinyl and Fragile. I never had Fragile on vinyl before, so I had Close to the Edge and some others. But yeah, it's fun. It's a different experience. Vinyl is a different experience, you know.
You know who got me back into Yes was I was interviewing Jeff Tate, and I'm sure you're familiar with him. And I said, if you could front any band that you could make up, what would it be? And he said, Yes. And I never had bought a Yes record, so I went out there and I bought one. And he says, yeah, my favorite's, you know, Close to the Edge. And I started listening to it. I'm like, this is fantastic. It's so good.
Yeah, Close to the Edge is one of my favorites. You know, the funny thing was, when I got it when I was a kid, the beginning of it is so kind of crazy and cacophonous that I thought, oh, they've lost it. But I almost didn't really, like, listen to it very much because of the beginning of it, which seems really funny to me now because, you know, it's one of my favorite all-time records.
Yeah, for me listening to it, it reminds me of being back in my 20s and listening to the radio and overnight, and the DJ must have had to go, like, have a smoke outside or something and put one of these long Yes songs on.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and those are short compared to the stuff that me and Mike do together.
Is that right? Yeah, I can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
So, so you got Morris Fest coming up next summer as well. I was trying to figure out whereabouts does that take place?
It's outside of Nashville.
Okay.
About five minutes from my house.
Yeah,
great.
Our friend Kid Rock does his thing down in Nashville, the Fish Fry. Have you had a chance to go check that out at all?
No.
You know what I'm talking about or no?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, so he lives up here and he's got a place down there now, too.
Oh, cool.
So
I've heard about that, but I'm not sure where it is or anything.
Well, listen, final thing here for him. We'll cut you loose, and my time is running short here. The concept records and stuff like that, what would you consider some of your favorites?
Oh, my personal favorite concept records?
Yeah.
Well, I love The Lamb Lies Down. Man, I love Jesus Christ Superstar.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy. Let's see. Tommy and Quadrophenia. Let's see. Thick as a Brick.
Mm.
Let's see. My mind's, you know. Tarkus, in a way, was a concept album, ELP. I'm probably forgetting some major ones, but. Yeah, I like storytelling music. I like musicals, really. I mean, I loved West Side Story, you know. I love very interesting, creative music, and, you know, I like music that tells stories. And where the music actually tells the story. It's just an amazing thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to checking this whole thing out, The Great Adventure. This is probably one of these records where you got to sit down and listen to it, right? It's like this day and age in the Spotify world and stuff, it's so boring to me. It's like you put this record together to be listened to from the first track to the last track, and I think that's how people should listen to these kind of albums, right?
Yeah, you got to carve yourself out a couple hours.
Oh, for sure.
And you might want to take a little 10-minute intermission, you know? I'm actually having a listening party at my house tonight. And so we're going to listen to it all the way through, me and a bunch of friends. And I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah, it's a different experience. You know, it's like the difference between a short story and a epic novel, you know? And it takes it's a deeper experience, but it takes time.
Well, I'll tell you what, it sounds super interesting, and I can't wait to listen to it. January 25th, The Great Adventure comes out. Hey, Neil, so good to talk to you. Thanks for the time.
Hey, man, thank you so much.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Prog rock legend Neil Morris on the Talkin' Rock podcast today. Not legendary is myself and Al Beck next to me. Well, speak for yourself, I suppose, right? You could be legendary.
Yeah, give me some time and a whole lot of charity, and maybe we can make it happen.
A whole lot of charity.
A whole lot of charity.
So, anyways, you know, I saw Greta Van Fleet was on SNL the other night, and I actually DVR'd it. Yeah. I'm trying to remember what I was doing. Anyways, I'm sure whiskey was involved. I watched it, and we've seen those guys a lot of times around here.
Sure, yeah.
You know, because they're kind of from here.
Yeah, they're from the area, Frankenmuth, Michigan, which is, you know, not right next door, but it's not that far away.
But they recorded right down the street, which is almost right next door. Seriously, yeah. 5 minutes from our station, right?
Yeah.
And so, and of course, Al Sutton, who's a friend of ours, mm-hmm. and Marlon from Kid Rock's band, Marlon Young, produced that record and stuff. And while I really like the band and I love their record, man, I like it a lot, I gotta say, man, the stage presence thing has always kind of bothered me a little bit. Three of the guys are getting it. The singer is just not getting it yet.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of bothering me a little bit.
You know, and stage presence, especially if you are the singer, is really important.
Right.
when that's your thing. You're the front man. You're the front man because you're up front. You're what everyone sees. But you know what, though? Good for those guys, though. If anyone missed it, the video is up online, of course. The young kids from Frankenmuth, Michigan, Greta Van Fleet, made their television SNL debut over the weekend, which is, you know what, really cool. Really
right.
Super cool.
You know, Josh, he's got to do something. You know what I'm saying? His brother's behind him, you know, playing bass guitar and stuff.
Yeah.
They're constantly doing stuff. And it's like, I don't know, man. I couldn't get past it. And it's like, I know that they're just young and whatever, but these guys have played a lot of shows, and I think I was expecting a little bit more. That's just me.
Yeah, you know, and it's just all eyes are still on these kids, though. And I know we mentioned this before on the podcast, but we had them on that big festival of ours, and Rob Zombie, Robin Sherry Moon Zombie, came rushing from backstage to watch these kids play from the side of the stage.
Oh, yeah, I mean, this was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah,
this wasn't like, you know, last week.
Right.
Yeah, this was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, good for those guys. You know what? Super nice kids, and I really like them, and I'm really pulling for them. I just kind of wish I could see Josh just kind of grab the bull by the horns just a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, they are still young, so he may yet find himself on the stage.
So, anyways, also Pearl Jam News. I saw those guys are working on some new stuff.
Yeah, they've been working on some new stuff actually for quite a while. The latest update from Jeff Ament. Was that they are going to be making a record. He says that they are in the middle of it, and he said that they're just going to keep plugging away until they get it done. And they said they've gone in a handful of different times over the last few years. They did release a new single last year to kind of give you a little taste of it all, but he does admit that one of the big delays for this new album sort of came around when Chris Cornell passed away. He said that losing Chris actually really hit all the guys in the band really hard, and that on top of life getting in the way just sort of set everything back. But Pearl Jam is still working on that new album, and they're really buckling down and trying to get this thing done. I had heard, I don't know if this is still what they're thinking, but I had heard that they weren't even planning on playing a bunch of shows until they finished the album.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Pearl Jam, I don't know, there hasn't been really much good from Pearl Jam since like the mid-90s.
Sure.
That's my own personal opinion. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, the first record, Ten, is hard to top. And then, of course, you know, Versus and stuff is pretty good. But, yeah, I don't know, man. It's like, you know, they go out and they tour. They play all these dates. They do all this stuff. And, yeah, Chris Cornell passed away like a year and a half ago and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, but like you said, life gets in the way. They all got kids and families and the whole thing. So, yeah, it's not easy being Pearl Jam.
Evidently not. Evidently not. But, you know, one of your favorite biopics recently, Meltdown, was probably that Bohemian Rhapsody. We've been talking a lot about it on the podcast.
Well, it was the only one I saw the last year.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough. But that's actually up for not one, not two, actually five Oscar nominations.
Is that right? Yeah. Yeah, it was good, man. It was really good.
Let's see. It's Academy Award nominations for Best Picture, of course, Sound Editing, Sound Mixing, Film Editing, and also Rami, was it Malek? Yeah, Malek. Rami Malek, who played Freddie Mercury, is up for Best Actor.
Yeah, and I thought the guy that played Brian May, I thought that he was going to be up for an award, the best guy to transition into Howard Stern, because that's what he looks like at the end of the movie. He looks like Howard Stern. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's the return of Fart Man, I guess. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So, you haven't seen the movie yet, have you?
Bohemian Rhapsody? No, I have not, no.
Slayer, I'm going to throw something at you.
I've seen Howard Stern's movie. Does that count for anything?
That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, but when you're in radio, that movie is hysterical.
Yeah, of course it is, you know. Speaking of great, you know, we can go off on a rant on radio movies.
Of course,
you've seen Talk Radio? Did I tell you about that one? That's
Talk
one of my
Radio.
Favorites.
I don't know if I've seen
Eric Bogosian.
No, I don't believe I've seen that.
Yeah, it was
one.
Like a screenplay, or it was a play, and it became a screenplay. It's kind of a darker, deeper dive as far as radio movies are concerned.
Well, just radio then. It's just deeper and darker than people realize. Yeah. Radio.
He plays a talk show host, and he gets people all riled up. It's
perfect.
Yeah, you got to check that one out if you get a chance.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Bohemian Rhapsody can bring something in.
Yeah, and then I know that this Elton John biopic is coming out next year too, so that should be pretty good. Yeah, they're saying that these biopics, man. You know, I'll tell you what, it bumped what's his name there, Queen, right back into the spotlight with Bohemian Rhapsody. So
my question for you is: are you going to go back to the theater and see the sing along version? Meltdown?
I am not.
Yeah. It's actually kind of a smart idea. I have zero personal interest in going to that thing.
Apparently you have zero personal interest in going to see the movie.
Well, yeah, I'll see it eventually. But I mean, going to a movie theater for a sing-along movie sounds miserable to me.
It sounds horrible.
It does. But some people would be into that, and I think it's actually a really good idea for something like a movie about Queen. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't understand. So when they're singing, is there going to be lyrics taken out?
Yeah, no, I guess so. Yeah, like during performances and stuff.
You're just going to see the guy moving his mouth?
Well, no, just like a sing-along. Just imagine you're five again and you're watching Sesame Street and they got the little bouncing ball across the lyrics or whatever, you know?
Wait a second. Is there going to be words on the screen?
I believe so, yeah.
Really?
They're redoing it as a sing-along.
Now, have you seen Rocky Horror Picture Show?
I have, yeah, okay. Once.
Oh, just
ago.
Once. Now, just see, one. I saw it a lot of times, but, you know, growing up when I did, it's like it played like every, you know, Friday night at midnight or Saturday or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got to see all the same people throwing the same rice and the same stupid crap all over the place.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of something I want to bring up real fast that you didn't actually have. Guns N' Roses topped the Billboard chart in December. Get this. They face-streamed live Sweet Child of Mine for their December 8th show in Honolulu, and it became the biggest Facebook Live video by a musical act. And the two of the four metrics that the chart measures. Now, these guys are using Facebook Live, and I know they go on Instagram Live a lot of times during concert and stuff. It's super cool to watch.
Yeah.
I've actually watched it before, like they're in the, like behind the stage or whatever, and Slash and Duff go out there, and you see Axl just getting ready and getting, you know, kind of jumping up and down. All of a sudden he goes out there. It's pretty cool to see the behind the scenes stuff like that.
Yeah, and you know what? A lot of these bands are utilizing the live streams. You know, you'll see sometimes concerts or special things. I think, God, there was some, maybe it was Hurricane Relief or something. I'm just drawing this out of memory, but Green Day did a special, like, charity sort of event or a concert, like in their basement over Facebook Live or something
or
so ago to raise funds for hurricane relief. So, I mean, it's like, it's kind of cool where you see a bunch of bands kind of utilizing that technology to reach the fans.
Yeah, it's really wild. Like what we can peer into some of our favorite rockers' lives, you know, and some of them, like, for example, Mick Mars is on Twitter and stuff, doesn't really use it. You don't really know much about what's going on with Mick. Then you got a guy like Nicky in the same band, and it's like, you know, he uses it all the time. And it's like, you know, he'll post stuff on their concert, or Tommy Lee or whatever. Yeah. You know, then Vince, not so much. I think Vince has people that do it for him. Anyways, like back in the day, in the early, you know, 1980s and stuff, you just had to imagine Ozzy biting the head off a bat.
Yes, you would, which did happen, and it's actually, I think the, I'm losing the number here, but 37th anniversary.
Yeah. I want to say it's 1982 because I had just discovered Ozzy around that time, and then that happened like shortly after or something like that, or before I discovered him, I can't recall. And then shortly after that, Randy Rhoads was killed, and you know, and I saw Ozzy, I think, for the first time 2 years later in 84.
Now, I believe the official story is that he didn't realize it was an actual bat at the time, but it may have, he just may have been on some drugs at the time. Who knows really for
sure? He did a lot of goofy stuff back then.
He did a lot of goofy stuff and still is just kind of a goof. But you know what? It's become sort of this this big mythos about Ozzy.
It's
this
whole thing of legend.
Yeah, the thing of legend, the bat. And you know what? He is actually kind of acknowledging and commemorating that anniversary with a plush bat toy. Specifically, I love the arbitrary 37th anniversary to celebrate something.
Well, you know, it's I saw this story and I'm like, you know, I should have asked Rudy Zarzo about that because he was probably on stage with him at the time. It's like one of those obvious questions you don't think to ask somebody because you think they've been asked it too many times or something.
Sure.
But I wonder how many times Rudy's talked about, you know, that particular incident.
Yes.
But right before that, so when Ozzy was first announced that he was going to be putting out a record and whatnot, after leaving Black Sabbath, doing a solo thing and what have you. You heard this story, right?
Mm.
And they had the doves.
Oh, yeah.
In the cages, right?
Yeah.
And so they were supposed to release these doves like a new beginning for Ozzy, right? And so Ozzy apparently was probably on something. I'm just guessing. I don't have nothing to base that on. But
aside from listening to him talk.
According to the story, one of the PR people was pissed him off or something. And so they went to release these doves, and Ozzy bit the head off one and spit it on the table.
Oh, my God.
I thought I saw that. I'm like, what? Now, I heard he did it to two of them. Now, I know for sure he did it to one because I've seen pictures of it, you know, that, you know, from back in the day.
Yeah.
Which, you know, could have been doctored, I suppose, but, you know.
Yeah, well,
And then, of course, the whole Alamo thing. Then he shaved his head after Randy Rhoads. Then they snorted the ants with Nikki Sixx on the sidewalk. I mean, it's just the list of stuff Ozzy did back in the day just goes on and on.
And now he's into plush toys.
That's right, plush toys.
Which I do want to point out is not, it's a web exclusive, so you got to go to Ozzy's website if you want to get this thing. But I also want to point out the head is detachable from the plush toy.
I've got one of those McFarlane, you know, Ozzy things. Remember they did the McFarlane stuff? They had, like, you know, Metallica and all this stuff. I got a Rob Zombie one. It's really killer. And I've got this Ozzy one, and of course there's all these bats all over the place and doves with the blood and stuff. Like little tiny like things that you know your little animals or children would choke on, but it's, you know, it's for adults.
Yeah, of course. And I wasn't kidding, the head is supposed to be detachable. It's mentioned in Ozzy's tweet promoting it,
as it should be.
Yes, right.
So speaking of Twitter, what's your socials there, Alan?
You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all of them at Al Beck Radio.
All right, there you go, at Meltdown WRIF, of course the show at Talk Rock with One. There we go. We'll get this right. And as I was listening to somebody else today talk about it, it's like, you know, if you give this show, if you've made it this far through all our blather, and you give this show a 5-star rating, it really helps to kind of, you know, expose the show and move it on to other parts of the interweb, and people get to see it and that kind of stuff, or write a review or whatever. But most importantly, thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing. 248-586-2988 if you want to leave a voicemail comment. This is Talking Rock. I'm Meltdown. That's Al Beck. Thanks so much for listening.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.